you trained and qualified as an accountant before entering Parliament. How did your career path lead to politics?
Where did it all go wrong? I love being in finance. I really enjoyed it. I wanted a stimulating career. I love being in business and all of that. But I just got more involved in my local community. So it was really very much me just thinking I wanted to try and make a difference locally where I was living. And it was a classic case of one thing leading to another. And I think the big turning point for me was eventually I got elected as a local councillor and just loved it. I just loved getting a zebra crossing done or, you know, whatever else fixed. And I just like being part of community groups. And so it was all about the local side of things for me that really, I just like being able to feel like I've genuinely made a positive impact on my local area for people.
And what's your favourite part of the job?
Favourite part of being an MP, I think, hopefully trying to speak up and be a voice for some people who may feel like there isn't one for them. And sometimes maybe being that person who just tells it quite bluntly like it is, even if that's a bit inconvenient. And I like the fact that I'm trying to do a bill that will help people who rent get a credit score that's better. And I think I couldn't do that if I wasn't an MP. And actually, I'm taking a bill through the law, the House of Commons with John Bird, who's in the House of Lords. He did the big issue. If we pass that law, it means up to 15 million renters get a better credit score. And if they get a better credit score, then they can get more affordable credit. They can save hundreds of pounds every year and get easier access to a mortgage. And to me, I think that's an amazing chance to be able to do that.
You've worked in a number of different government departments. At one point as Secretary of State for Education and Minister for Women and Equalities at the same time. Which was your favourite department to work in and why, out of all of them?
Well, I think the most important role for me was education, because I, like virtually everyone in this country, went to my local comprehensive school and came through the state system. And I came from a very working class background in Rotherham, and I never would have made anything of myself without my teachers, without my education. I was the first person in my family to go to university. I nearly went to Nottingham, and it really opened up my life and my opportunities. And so, again, the chance to be in a role where I could try and improve that very system I'd been in for a new generation of kids in it and young people, I just thought was amazing. And it was my favourite ever job. And actually, I ended up leaving government because I preferred to stay working in that area and working on social mobility and opportunity than being shunted off into some other place where I just didn't feel like I could focus on the thing that I really loved and I really think matters.
And have you always supported Conservative, or have your political views sort of developed and mixed over the years?
Well, I think it's interesting because I grew up in a part of the country that's really Labour.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, to be honest, Jeremy Corbyn was the establishment at the time. So maybe I was that rebel that kicked back against all those boring people who were running Rotherham, I thought, really badly. And in fact, you know, we've seen all the challenges that Rotherham had since. So being a Conservative, and I know for a lot of young people, you haven't seen the party in this light, but for me it was about opportunity, an economy that was creating jobs and careers, and then just well-run managed finances, because that's what we had to do at home with our family finances. And in the end, government doesn't have any money of its own. It's all ours that it gets and then spends for us. So I sort of just wanted something that was sensible, but actually that would work for my life. And for me, that's what I felt the Conservative Party was all about. I know a lot of young people will think, crikey, that doesn't sound like the party I think the Tories are. But actually, for a lot of us, that's when I got involved, it was, and that's what I want to see it become again.
And something that is quite important to me, so I'm obviously a young woman, and I think that, in my opinion, opportunities for women have improved over time. But what were your main aims when you took the position as Minister for Women and Equalities?
I think the most important thing we did, actually, long term, was the regulations on the gender pay gap. And I remember the day that those regulations went through Parliament, they didn't get any press at all. It was just the day they came into force, and I was like, this is going to have a really nice ripple effect through British business. And I also remember the Department of Education officials saying, or the Government Equalities Office saying, how much compliance should we be aiming for? What percentage? I was like, 100%, obviously. And that's what they went. And I bumped into them the other day in Parliament. They got 100% compliance.
Oh, that's great.
So that was a big thing. But beyond that, I've always campaigned on things like FGM, ending forced marriage, and just gender equality around the world. And although I absolutely adored education, I think maybe the job that had the biggest impact on me that I had in government was doing international development, because I really saw a lot of different countries where, for all the challenges Britain has, you could really put it into perspective. And I saw countries just with people who didn't even get a chance to go to school, let alone make the most of their potential. But it's all part of the same issue, which is wherever you are, whatever country, you know, your biggest asset is your people. And the more you can be a country that naturally uses everyone's talents, the more successful people will be, which I think is really good. Everyone wants to be the best version of themselves, but I think the more successful countries will be as well. So in a sense, it was that ethos that I brought into that role doing Minister for Women and Equalities.
And for you personally, what is the biggest challenge you've had to overcome in your life or in your career?
That's a really good question. I think maybe it's three things in a way. One, it felt like the journey was a really long one. And I remember when I was a really, you know, young person in Rotherham, seeing the kind of thing that I thought I might want to do. I had no idea of politics. I mean, no one in my family was involved. But just feeling like it was a really long journey and just thinking I'm going to have to work really hard for a really long time to have a chance of getting anything out of my life that I want. I think the second barrier is I don't think I knew what opportunity looked like, and it's hard to aim for opportunities that no one's even taught you about. And I think the third barrier was just having the confidence that you can actually do stuff and it can be you. So sometimes you look at people who've done well and you're like, wow, they're amazing. And actually, but somebody's got to do those jobs. Yeah. Like, they're only a person. They go home at night. They probably worry about stuff too. But that could be you. And in a sense, after I left government, I've done this thing called the Social Mobility Pledge. And if you're interested and want to find out, it's socialmobilitypledge.org. And what I'm asking companies to do is to be in schools talking about opportunities so that they're having those conversations with young people to say, well, this is what all these things mean. Like, choose yourself, but these are the careers. I want them to open up and allow more young people to do work experience and apprenticeships, because the only work experience I got was at the local supermarket. But and it was really good as well. I mean, it was good to do it. But I think if I'd had more choice about sampling, maybe going to the local accountant or going into the local hospital to see what that was all about, I would have taken that. But it just wasn't on offer. And then the other thing I want all these companies to commit to doing is just open recruitment. So don't screen people out because of their name or whatever. So to do name-blind recruitment, maybe to look at other techniques that mean that even if somebody's gone to a really bad school and therefore not got as good a grades, that should be kind of flagged up that they might have done brilliantly in spite of going to that school, and actually you should take that into account. So it's about levelling up the playing field. But I think the more I can do, I feel, having been on my own journey, to help the journey easier for a new generation of people behind me, then that's what really drives me, and that's why I'm doing my work on social mobility.
And what's your proudest achievement?
Oh, that's a good question. Am I allowed three in government?
Of course.
I'll go for, I think in transport, we did the Olympics.
Oh yeah, that is a big one.
And we had to fit all those people into a city that's so busy, it's got a thing called the congestion charge. And it was all fine. That was amazing. The team of people I worked with are incredible. In DFID, the thing I'm most proud of is tackling Ebola. Because that was just running rampant. I mean, thousands of people died, but it would have been tens of thousands. And what I was so proud of was people in my department, and in me actually, but people in my department just went out there and fixed it. There was no known cure. If you got it, then it was a serious problem for you. You know, quite possibly we're going to die. And yet hundreds of different people, and MOD people, and NHS people from our country willingly chose to go to Freetown in Sierra Leone to try and help fix it. And I remember I went there more than I went back up to Rotherham during that period. I was in Sierra Leone more, but and we managed it and we did it. And then I think in education for me, it would be putting in place this social mobility action plan, which is all about closing gaps, because we know that advantage accumulates, but so does disadvantage. So if you close those gaps that open up early, then you know, you get people on the right track, and actually they'll do the work for themselves. You know, they'll be successful on their own terms, but you just need to help them be that person that they can be, and not let things get in their way. And so I'm proud of the social mobility plan, and I guess I'm proud of the social mobility pledge. It's sort of only been going for 10 months, but we've got 160 massive companies. It's covering companies who employ over 1 million people already, and I just think it's grassroots change, isn't it? And not everything's big ticket. A lot of the things that really change things are individual people deciding they want something to be different and then changing the bit of stuff around them that they can influence. If we all do that, then things become a lot different and a lot better, I think, in Britain. And that's what I want to be part of.
If you won the position as Mayor of London, what would be the first thing you would change or institute?
I would get every company in London to sign up to the Social Mobility Pledge, and I would make London the social mobility capital of the country, and I would try and have us as a trailblazer to innovate and do really different things to connect up young people in the capital with opportunity that's on their doorstep. But the reason I didn't go for being mayor is that I grew up in Rotherham, and that I can't ever sort of... It's not that I turn my back, but what I mean is the whole of it matters to me. And what I'd like for my own community here in London, I want for everybody. And so I did the pledge as a national campaign, because I don't think Rotherham's changed enough, and I didn't have enough opportunity on my doorstep. And I still think young people in too many places don't have enough opportunity. And I want to fix that. It's as simple as that.
In terms of young voters, because obviously I'm at university, I do politics, so I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are interested in politics. Mm. However, I do know a lot of young people who don't go and vote and don't really understand or have an interest in politics. What opportunities are there for young people in the Conservative Party, and how do you reach out to young voters?
Oh, I would say one of the things we've seen in the Labour Party is a lot of young people get involved. Okay. And they've really transformed Labour.
Mm.
Now, I might not agree with that politics, but that's not the point. The point I'm making is a young generation of people needs to get involved with the Tory party. We need some fresh blood, fresh thinking. I mean, if democracy is going to work for people, then it, at the heart of it is party politics in a way, rightly or wrongly. And what I am a voice for young people in my party. I represent the youngest demographic community in the country alongside Battersea. The average age of a voter here in Putney is about 37, 38. So it really matters to me. And it matters to me because I care about opportunity. But no, I would say, if you're sat listening to this and you just think, oh, the Tory party's not for me, I genuinely would say, well, get involved, please. Because actually, I got involved years ago when I looked at the Tory party and just thought, I think I know what this party's about. But I'm worried it's going to go off in the wrong direction. And so I thought, I'll just be one person in it, and at least I can be a voice saying what I think people want. And so I would just say to people, be a voice inside the party. Get in touch with me. Get joined up. And then let's make the party what we want. And then it can be a real choice. You not just think about voting for Labour. You can actually think about voting for Conservatives, because actually your voice is in the Conservative Party shaping policy.
As another area that's quite obviously important to students is tuition fees. And as Secretary of State for Education, you have plans to scrap the tuition fees for university students. What sort of response did you receive when proposing these plans, and why was it an important area for you to focus on?
I felt that we needed to have a fundamental look at the system, because although, as somebody who was the first person in my own family to go to university, although we looked at all the evidence and actually it shows a lot of, you know, we managed to take away the cap on numbers, so loads more young people are getting to go. I was just worried that if you rolled the clock forward, the level of debt was going to start putting people off. So even though there wasn't any evidence at the moment, I don't think you should wait for a problem to happen and before you fix it. And I just thought, for me, it wasn't acceptable to get 5 years down the line and go, oh, what a shame. Look, it's a drop-off and some people have been put off. And then go, oh, we should fix it. But what about the people who had been put off? So I really challenged myself to say, how would you do it differently? And I think the way you do it is you do it through the graduate contribution. It goes into a higher education fund, a bit like funding the NHS. But obviously graduates pay because graduates have had the benefits. But then you use that to fund the next group of people having the same opportunity that you had. And I would like to see companies maybe making a contribution into that higher education fund too, because they really benefit from young people being skilled up, and they're making a contribution for apprenticeships. And that would seem to make sense to me. And it would mean no debt, no tuition fees, no £100 million wasted by the student loan company sending you a statement every year that sometimes isn't even right about how much you owe. No pointless interest accumulating on a debt that like three quarters of people won't ever pay off. I mean, what's the point? It's time to kind of recognise that and think a bit more broadly about how you fix it.
The next big thing is obviously Brexit. You
I can't believe you used the B word.
I'm sorry, I was going to avoid it, but I just thought, you know, it's something that we can't really avoid at the moment, no. Unfortunately. You have endorsed a second Brexit referendum.
Yes.
Do you think that that is likely to happen? And why have you endorsed it?
First of all, I think Parliament's just not going to agree on anything. It's just how it is. You know, and I get people writing to me going, why don't you lot just get on with it? And we really have tried, but I'm an accountant. I can do the numbers. I don't think anything's getting a majority. And so I think in that case, people are going to have to decide. And you could do a general election, but that's party politics. And actually the challenge with Brexit is it cuts across all of that. So you see Labour struggling and Jeremy Corbyn like sitting on the fence on a people's vote. You know, obviously in my party, some people don't want it, others do. So it's just not part of politics. So you're better off, if you have to go back to people, just asking them the question, and what's wrong with that? How can the people overrule the people? I mean, we are a democracy. We have reached stalemate. But actually, I think it's a good thing to go back to people and ask them what they want now. With 2.5 years down the track, we've got some clear options. Why not allow people to decide when it's democracy, especially when we know that there are, I think, over 1 million young people who would have been eligible to vote in this next referendum who weren't aged 16. I'm sorry, this is the longest term decision we could possibly take. We know, like many people, the younger you are, the less likely you are to be happy with Brexit. I'm sorry, you have to give people a voice. It is as straightforward as that. And, you know, I would campaign for Remain. I've made no bones about that. But the thing I believe in most is people having their own say.
My final question, just to round it off, is a bit less of a intense one. Are there any pearls of wisdom you have learned throughout your life that you wish you'd known earlier?
Yes, have the confidence to go for it. And also realise that any success you get in life is very unlikely to just be a straight line. You know, there's going to be times when you just screw up. And don't worry about it too much. That's just normal. It's normal life. And often the times when you sow your seed for the thing that you'll really nail is the moment you've messed up. Because actually, if you can respond to that positively and go, you know what, I'm not going to let that put me off. I'm going to keep going and be a bit resilient. it's that moment that you actually start to win. So don't worry about things not all going well. It doesn't matter. You can get over it and you can keep going and still be successful. And actually talk to your friends about it as well, because your support structure around you is really, really important. And it'll be those people that help you get there.
Perfect. Thanks very much for speaking with me.
Thank you.